Hi there and welcome. Jonathan here. These talks are offered freely so that no one is ever denied access to these practices. Your support makes a big difference. If you feel inspired to make a donation, please go to jonathanfaust.com. Thank you. I'd like to start off this talk with a 45-second Zen pop quiz. If you would, if you could close your eyes. And for the next 45 seconds, try not to be aware. Any luck? If you can remember that, we'll be referring back to that experience. First, a little classic story. A beggar had been sitting by the side of the road for over 30 years. One day, a stranger walked by. "Spare some change," mumbled the beggar, mechanically holding out his old baseball cap. "I have nothing to give you," said the stranger. Then he asked, "What's that you're sitting on?" "Nothing," replied the beggar. "Just an old box. I've been sitting on it for as long as I can remember." "Ever look inside?" the stranger asked. "No," said the beggar. "What's the point? There's nothing in there." "Have a look inside," insisted the stranger. And the beggar managed to pry open the lid, and with astonishment and disbelief, and elation, he saw that the box was filled with gold. There are lots of variations to that classic story, and they speak of something lost and the search to find it. That's the hero's journey, and that's the search of the Buddha's life, kind of a classical story of the hero's journey, of dedication, of perseverance, and ultimately release. And that's what's called you here, this search. A wonderful poem that speaks to this by Khalid al-Budur. It's entitled Lantern. "The moon stays all night, hanging like a lantern in the dark. I'm looking at patches of silver clouds that envelop the moon, searching for a dream I lost when I was a boy." Isn't that what the practice is all about? Searching for something that we've lost? And something called you here for this retreat. This time in a supportive environment, surrounded by like-minded people, kind of the optimal environment for you to do your exploration and your search. Thus far, Pat spoke about the challenging energies that arise when you're present. And Tara spoke of transforming your relationship to fear and how to cultivate a more fearless heart. And I'd like to talk tonight about some of the strategies you can employ as to how you pay attention. And this talk is in four parts. And the first part is about arriving in the here and now. The second part is about observing the here and now. Third is about investigating the here and now. And the fourth part is about awakening in the here and now. And if you can keep in mind, just as a backdrop, that sense that you can't not be aware, and sense how that might inform. One teacher, Locke Kelly, talked about this field as awake awareness. And we'll explore through some stories, through some short practices and from some readings from Ajahn Chah, who's perhaps one of the most influential teachers in this particular lineage, some of the different ways that you can pay attention. And remembering that these are all skillful means that can support you in your exploration. So the first is about arriving, training the mind to arrive in the here and now. Little survival tip. If you're ever out doing walking meditation and get lost, and you realize you need to build a fire and you don't have matches, if you're wearing glasses that have a convex lens, you can take some dry leaves and some dry tinder, and assuming the sun is shining, you can hold the lens close, let it be still enough, and photons, which are particles that carry visible light from the sun to the earth, contain energy and heat. And by holding that lens close enough and still enough, you can take the energy of the sun and focus it to where it'll reach about 450 degrees, and you can start a fire. That's probably a worthless survival tip. You have to have a fire, you have to have sun, you have to need a fire, you have to be wearing glasses. But it does make a point. Awareness is like sunlight. You can take awareness and narrow it down to 450 degrees and start a fire. Or you can just sit in the open sunlight and sunbathe. And you've been developing concentration these days on retreat. It may not seem like it. It may seem like you're more lost than you're here. I always like to acknowledge Stephen Levine, who said one of the best descriptions of meditation. He said, meditation is one insult after another. Even if it feels like your mind has been completely out of control, you have been coming back again and again and again. And you may have noticed the byproduct of that practice. We'll do just a short little meditation, if you would. If you can close your eyes. We'll take just a few moments to explore this quality of one-pointed awareness. You might bring your attention to your breath, and maybe even just the subtlety of the breath at the rim of the nostrils. And just explore for this next minute or so what it's like to cultivate one-pointed attention here. And then, if you wish, just release the technique and just feel the imprint of just these moments of focused, concentrated attention. And then, if you like, you can open your eyes or you can remain with them closed. You may notice that there's a gathering of attention through concentration. You might notice the byproduct of calming, a quality of soothing. And you may notice, as a result of the hours that you have put in your practice, that there's more of a capacity to sustain attention for longer and longer periods of time. And by developing concentration, you can do a lot of things. You can stay in one place for a longer period of time. You can stay present even when it's difficult. When you're buffeted with strong sensation, strong emotion, strong thought forms, you can see more clearly into the fact that everything is changing in your experience. Most people who are successful have somehow managed to develop concentration. Edwin Moses was a track and field athlete, you may recall, who won 107 consecutive finals and many gold medals. And he said, my concentration level blocks out everything. Concentration is why some athletes are better than others. You develop that concentration in training. Concentration is a critical part of practice. It's the foundation. And you arrive again and again. In this practice, you start again and again. There's an element of sort of blocking out everything that you're not focused on. You narrow your attention and you give your mind a job to do. Ajahn Chah said, when sitting in meditation, with every thought that comes by, say, that's not my business. And since we're quoting athletes also, Jack Nicklaus said that concentration is an antidote to anxiety. One point of attention. So concentration develops the quality of absorption. And we explored this in all kinds of different ways. For a while, I was passionate about rock climbing. What I didn't have in raw strength, I made up for in wingspan. And I found I had kind of a natural ability. And the absorption, the concentration, was an extraordinary experience. I developed a new move, which I don't think had been articulated before. I called it the mouth suck. It's when you're so desperate to stay on, you'll suck on the rock just to keep the suction going. But perhaps you can sense what concentration brings you in your practice. These first few days of retreat, you're paying your dues. Either you've come in contact with how deeply depleted you are, and you're beginning to fill the cup, or you're discharging all kinds of thoughts and wild emotions. But each time you come back, there's a letting go. And there's also a reinforcement of presence. So there are tremendous benefits to concentration. There are exquisite teachings that can take you very, very deep into absorptive states. But this practice is not all about concentration. It's a tool, a very valuable tool. There are lots of very deeply concentrated people on the planet who are miserable. And developing concentration can feel like a wrestling match. But there's a wonderful quote from Swami Muktananda, which can be helpful, where he said, your goal is not to battle with the mind, but to witness the mind. Every time you come back, every time you start again, you are letting go of something, but you're also developing your capacity for self-observation without judgment. You're developing the capacity to witness or observe what is here without judgment. Quality of mindfulness. Developing this capacity to observe without judgment is another faculty which can be transformational in your life. For many years, I lived in an ashram, and for a number of years it was pretty hardcore. I had a poverty vow, a celibacy vow, lots of observances and restraints, and I gave up my New Yorkers and only read scripture for a couple of years. We didn't watch any movies that could be at all disturbing, so we watched lots of Disney movies. And for some reason, Pee Wee Herman was a big hit for a while there. But I remember once I went into New York City to go to a conference kind of representing the ashram. I went with a friend, and we thought, let's go see a movie. And I'm not going to tell you the name of the movie because you'll be thinking about it for the rest of the week. It's like when I'm doing an interview and someone comes in and says, there's this song going on over and over in my head. Don't tell me, don't tell me, don't tell me. But I love movies. And the movie we chose turned out to be a psychological thriller. And I didn't realize how much I had kind of purified my mind over those years. And there was some, to put it mildly, some deviant behavior in this movie. And I completely freaked out. I was just absolutely twisted and terrified by this movie. And at some point, I was saying to myself, this is a movie. These are paid actors. There is a director. Someone wrote this script. There's a catering table over to the left. And I realized that I had founded a certain kind of refuge in taking that seat of the observer. I became less identified with the movie and more aware of who I was as the observer of that phenomena. And this can be a very helpful part of our practice. Again, if you like, you can close your eyes. Take just a short few moments to explore this. You might just sense the breath and notice this quality of who you are as the observer, as the witness of what is changing. And for this next minute or so, notice everything that changes. And you might inquire, is there anything in your experience that doesn't change? You might now deepen your breath. And if you like, you can let the eyes open or feel free to remain with them closed if that's more comfortable. As you continue to relax and pay attention, this alchemy of concentration and relaxation, your capacity to observe becomes more refined. And you begin to notice more. You might begin to notice sensations you hadn't felt before. Different patterns in your experience. Perhaps realize, wait, that thought has already come through 10 times today. You might begin to notice the four foundations of awareness, how there's this field of energy. And arising out of this field of energy is this quality of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And out of this field of energy and unpleasant, pleasant, and neutral, different thought forms and moods and emotions arise. You might begin to recognize categories of thoughts, as Pat spoke of the hindrances, or the limbic lovers, all the thoughts that fall in the category of aversion, judgment, anger, blame, all the thoughts you can categorize having to do with wanting, craving. The thoughts associated with worry, anxiety, restlessness. The thoughts associated with sloth and torpor. Those that are tinged with a quality of doubt or self-criticism. You start to see into the patterns that arise. You begin to see in your own experience the arising of what are the lists that arise out of Buddhist psychology. You begin to see these. The five hindrances, the four noble truths, that stress and suffering is part of the experience, that anywhere you find yourself stressed or suffering, there's a cause. That cause has to do with some form of clinging. You begin to see that you can let go, that there are techniques and strategies and awarenesses that cultivate a greater sense of wholeness. The more you begin to explore both concentration and relaxation and this quality of self-observation without judgment, you naturally begin to notice what pulls you away. How these five energies pull you away. This beautiful teaching of the eight worldly winds how we're buffeted all the time by the desire for gain and the fear of loss, the desire for pleasure, the fear of pain, the desire for praise and the fear of blame, the desire for approval and the fear of disapproval. All this you begin to see more clearly, directly as a result of your capacity to concentrate, relax, and observe. You begin to see into the phenomena of the second arrow, how when you are experiencing anything unpleasant, that when you add to it a narrative or a story that has to do with judgment or has to do with aversion, that you perpetuate the suffering. Some words from Ajahn Chah. Just try to keep your mind in the present. Whatever arises in the mind, just watch it and let go of it. Don't even wish to be rid of thoughts. Then the mind will return to its natural state. No discriminating between good and bad, hot and cold, fast and slow. No me and no you. Just what there is. When you meet these energies, just see them and let them go. Don't think about what's already past. Don't worry about those things you've not yet seen. Stick to the present. Don't be concerned by the length of the road or the destination. Everything is changing. Whatever you pass, don't cling to it. Whatever arises in the mind, watch it. Let it go. So in the midst of everything that changes, what is there that doesn't change? What arises from this is a quality of the witness, a sense of the observer, the one who knows, the one who is aware. There's a story of Ajahn Chah when people would come to meditate in his community, that he would wander around and he would ask two questions. The first question would say, he would say, tell me about your suffering. And people would speak of their struggles, where their mind would go, the pain they were experiencing, etc. And he would listen, and then he would ask the following question, can you bear it? Those two inquiries are the wings, the two wings of the practice. What is your experience right now? That is the seed of wisdom, to recognize what's true, what's actually happening, not your story or your preference, what's actually here. Can you be with it? Can you let it be? That is the seed of compassion, your capacity to allow, your capacity to let go. And this is one of the distinctions of Vipassana, that when something strong or persistent arises, you can turn your attention from the anchor to investigate what has presented itself. The analogy I use all the time, because I find it so helpful, from Joseph Campbell. He speaks of a large circle. And through the middle of the circle is a horizontal line. Above the line is what you're aware of. Below the line is what you're not aware of. When you relax and pay attention, the line begins to move. You begin to feel things you hadn't felt before. You begin to notice things you hadn't noticed before. All of this becomes more present. And so we begin to notice what is here, and we begin to explore what it means to investigate what is here. Some things we can recognize, and they disappear. It's been said that some phenomena are self-liberating. As soon as you notice them, they dissipate. when things arise, we can explore this investigative quality. I wanted to say just a few things about this because it is a practice that can be so helpful in refining the technique of investigation. I had a friend who referred someone to me, a businessman who was feeling chronic pain, was having difficulty working with it. Tried all kinds of things. I thought, well, maybe this meditation stuff would help. So we explored a little bit of what was going on. He had chronic pain through his neck and shoulders, his lower back, and even into his abdomen. He was extremely wealthy. He owned a number of businesses. And a number of years ago, he had gone into business with his father. His father was a very, very hard-driving guy. His father was supposed to retire and turn the business over to him, but he just couldn't let go. He just wanted to keep growing it. And so there were some challenges in their relationship. So we began to explore the sensations he was feeling. And as we explored kind of the chronic sensations, I asked if it was okay to be with it. And he goes, yeah, let's go for it. So we began to move from his story to the actual experience of what was there. And there's a very interesting part I find is so helpful for myself whenever I'm presented with physical pain or strong emotional turmoil or strong mental state. And that is, there's a desire of the mind to figure it out. And what I try to do for myself is to let go of figuring it out, but instead to have the intention just to be familiar with what's there. There's something about that internal shift. I'm not going to try to figure it out. My intention is just to be familiar with what is here. So we explored that. And as we began to describe what he was feeling on the inside, there was a kind of a stabbing feeling in his belly and his heart. And with this line between what we're aware of and what we're not aware of, much of what we feel when we do this investigation in the body is it's usually unformed because it's just below the line. We don't quite know what's there. As you relax, concentrate, and pay attention, you can begin to sense what's there. So he described this collection of sensations. So I don't know what this is, but it's some kind of feeling. So I asked him, Is there an emotional word that describes this feeling? I said, oh, this is anger. I said, let's see if we can verify that. When you check back with the feeling, does the word match the feeling? And he paused for a while and he said, no, that's not the word. This is disappointment. And suddenly his whole countenance shifted. His mind was saying it was anger. But when he checked in below the line, that wasn't the word. The word was disappointment. And that began to open up a whole new investigation. A whole sense of being a chronic disappointment to his father. What that was like. As he explored being intimate with this feeling, he recognized that this feeling went way, way back. Maybe even pre-verbal. Such an old feeling of being such a sense of a chronic disappointment with his father. So then we explored the nourishing with loving presence, which can be empathy or compassion or kindness. And as he began to explore offering this felt sense, a quality of empathy and compassion, his whole countenance began to shift. He was very gray. Blood was starting to flow back into his face. And he began to just describe what it felt like, to feel a sense of expansion, a shifting inside. He actually began to feel some empathy for his father. And he realized, you know, my grandfather was exactly like my father. And this is what it must have been like for him. And some tears began to emerge. And later he said, you know, I just realized I'm doing the same thing to my kids. And then he really started crying. And he said, this stops right here. I am not going to pass this on. Through his capacity to investigate, to recognize what was there, to allow, to be intimate, to nourish it with compassion, there was for him a profound shift. He began to see the whole story from a different perspective. There's a quality of the end and rain of nourishing with loving presence. There's another quality of end which leads us to a sense of non-identification. And for him, he began to see that whole phenomena from a very different perspective, not as tightly identified, with a much deeper sense of understanding. There's another quality of investigation which was part of this, which Tara referenced earlier, that when you're presented with challenging things, that you can ask yourself on occasion, what story am I believing? It can be very fruitful sometimes. The trap of that is it can be a little bit of an intellectual exercise. But just to ask yourself, what am I believing? And in this case, he realized that he had a chronic belief that he wasn't good enough, despite all of his worldly success. And so we investigated that as well. I asked him if that belief was true. And he said intellectually he knew it wasn't, but it felt that way. And this can be a very powerful investigation when you find yourself really identifying an operative belief, to ask yourself, what is that like inside when you think that thought? How does your body and your nervous system hold that belief? And as he investigated that sense of not being good enough, he could identify this very, very small feeling inside. And the rain practice began again, of allowing, being intimate, to really get to know and feel how that lives on the inside, to nourish it with empathy, compassion, or kindness. When you have a sense of how that belief lives in your body and in your nervous system, there is another inquiry you can do which is quite powerful, and that is to ask yourself, who are you without that thought? And for him, there was a profound shift of sensing possibility and excitement in his life. So that's a rather dramatic illustration. But as you explore this quality of investigation, it can be a profound opportunity to turn your attention inward, to have tea with what is presenting itself. You might take a moment just to close your eyes once again. You might reflect on these days on retreat, of your most challenging moments. And you might just settle on one moment that felt tremendously difficult to you. And as you breathe, just to recognize that presentation of sensation, of emotion, quality of mind. Not to do anything about it, but just to recognize being visited by a challenge. Resistance is a sign of potential growth, of potential insight. Sometimes when what arises, it can feel too much. We can touch into a quality of fear and helplessness that is more than we sense we can handle. In that case, it's very strategic and wise to let it know you see it. find another time when the conditions are different to let it know your intention to be with it. I'd like to share with you these words from Joseph Campbell about this journey. Whatever your fate is, whatever the hell happens, you say, this is what I need. It may look like a wreck, but go at it as though it were an opportunity, a challenge. If you bring love to that moment, not discouragement, you will find strength there. Any disaster you can survive is an improvement on your character, your stature, and your life. What a privilege. This is when the spontaneity of your own nature will have a chance to flow. And then, looking back at your life, you will see that the moments which seemed to be the great failures, followed by wreckage, were the incidents that shaped the life you have now. You'll see this is true. Nothing can happen to you that is not positive. Even though it looks and feels at the moment like a crisis, it is not. The crisis throws you back, and when you are required to exhibit strength, it comes. And you might let your eyes open, or again, remain with them closed if you like. While there are times in practice when it can feel like it's too much, when it's wise to retreat, or a time when there's more energy, more presence, more of a capacity to be with what's there, you may find that there are times when you can be with it, when you can feel that internal shift. And you may find as you practice that confidence begins to emerge. Confidence in the practice, trust in the practice and what it brings you and where it can take you. So in these practices, there is an element of doing. You're working with what arises. You develop calm and concentration. You identify what's here. You sense how to more be skillfully present with what's there. Sometimes when you're doing investigation and you sort of get the rush of having ridden a wave, there can be a question that has come up in with some people that if you're sitting and you're feeling fine, should I be working on something? Should I actively be investigating or deconstructing something? Remember once I was on a retreat and I had a very, very difficult process. And I stayed with it and I stayed with it and I stayed with it. And I felt this kind of rising of tension. And then on the other side of that wave, this deep sense of relief and a deep sense of insight and a sense of expanse. And then immediately my mind went, okay, what's next? Come on, come on, bring it on. I have found that in this practice, you don't have to look for anything to work on. It will find you. And actually, the moments where there's not a lot going on, those are profound moments of rest, preparing for the next wave, whatever that may be. The practice is ultimately about saying yes to what is here. Father Thomas Keating, who was one of the founders of Christian contemplative prayer, this beautiful description of meditation, he said, meditation is the practice of consent. Consenting to what is here. So in these practices, what does it mean to be awake? Jason Siff wrote a great book called Unlearning Meditation. He made a point where he said you can get trained in any one tradition and find another tradition that will give you exactly the opposite instructions. I take some heart in that. Because what it really means is we need to find our own way. One tradition tells you to close your eyes. Another tradition tells you to open your eyes. And we have this span of tools. Developing concentration. Developing this capacity of self-observation without judgment. Developing the skill to be more intimate with what is arising. And so we hear some instructions that say, meditate like your hair's on fire. Then we hear other traditions say, enlightenment is only available through deep relaxation and letting go. How do we justify these? And the answer is yes. So there are practices of doing. You're calling yourself back again and again and again to the here and now. You take the seat of the observer. You fall off the seat and you get back on again. And there are practices of being. Inquiries that guide you to a sense of effortlessness. Remember that first inquiry? Try not to be aware. That field of awake awareness that's already here. There was a teacher who once shared a pivotal insight he had. He was investigating an issue. And then he thought, maybe I'm asking the wrong question. Maybe it's not what is happening, but to whom is this happening? What is the self that is experiencing all of this? And the Buddha said that nothing whatsoever is to be clung to as I or mine. And when we explore this, what that means, and we've all had that experience, that taste when there's no I or mine present. For many of us, it's an experience of expansiveness, an experience of deep happiness, a moment of intimacy, a deep experience of flow. When I and mine is not present. So awareness is already here. Wakefulness is already here. Another Zen pop quiz, if you will. You can close your eyes. What would happen if you relaxed right now? What would happen if you relaxed even more than that? If you dropped all effort, all technique? There is something here about embracing a quality of effortlessness that can be an entryway to this quality of presence, to this field of awake awareness. Words from Ajahn Chah. Do not try to become anything. Do not try to make yourself into anything. Do not be a meditator. Do not become enlightened. When you sit, let it be. When you walk, let it be. Grasp at nothing. Resist nothing. Deepening your breath. letting your eyes open. I find it helpful to remember that there's a span of experience. As the great meditation teacher Pat Coffey Anandaji says, you are developing yourself as a contemplative artist. And you have these tools available for you. The capacity to narrow your attention, to concentrate, to arrive, to gather your attention in one place. The capacity to take the seat of the observer, non-judging awareness, to notice what is here, what's changing, how you're relating to it. The capacity to move your awareness in a way to be more intimate with what is here. To see the details of what is happening inside. To call on loving presence and to observe the impact, the imprint that can have on your experience. To bring in that quality of warmth and lubrication that allows you to let go. And as well, this quality of resting and presence. So how do we access this quality of presence? It seems to be available when we call on deep relaxation. When you call on a quality of surrendering and letting go. There are inquiries that can be helpful to ask yourself, what could soften right now? What could let go right now? You can ask yourself, what is it that is listening right now? And notice where that question takes you. What is there if there is no problem to be solved? So as we reflect on these teachings and those who have gone before us, it can be skillful to develop your capacity to concentrate, to cultivate one-pointed awareness. It can be skillful to develop your capacity to observe without judgment, to take the seat of the observer. It can be skillful to know when to pause and investigate what is presenting, to be more and more intimate with what is there, to explore your capacity to call on that nourishing quality of compassion, of loving presence. And it can be skillful to learn how to surrender, how to relax into a quality of effortlessness. The third Zen patriarch famously said that this path is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undistinguished, undisguised. Separate the smallest amount, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Ajahn Chah, do everything with a mind that lets go. Do not accept praise or gain or anything else. If you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you will have complete peace. So I thought it might be nice for us to take a little time to sit together and to explore how these elements work together. you might take these moments just simply to relax and soften and feel. Can you sense this field of awake awareness? And you may take some time, if you wish, to explore the practice of focus or concentration. Call forward an anchor. And explore this alchemy of both concentration and at the same time relaxation. And you might, for just a minute or two, notice how intimately you can sustain moment-to-moment attention here at this point. Sensing this quality of gathering your attention. And in this quality of concentration, this practice of beginning again and again, coming back. And you might, if you wish, sense a quality of foreground and background. With the anchor in the foreground, as you relax and widen your attention, to open to all that is moving, shifting, changing, and sensing this quality of non-judging awareness, this quality of the witness. And you might sense from time to time this quality of allowing, this field of wakefulness. You might inquire, what could soften or relax or let go right now? What could soften, relax, or let go even more than this? practices of focus and concentration help you to gather your attention. They help you to arrive in the here and now. The practices of observing without judgment allow you to recognize all that is changing. The practices of letting go open you to vast space, to the mystery. Do everything with a mind that lets go. If you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you will have complete peace. Namaste. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.